What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, esteemed colleagues. This week's podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Optometry Times.
Hello, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. This is Jennifer Lyerly, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, Dr. Daryl Glover, right in Nigeria, but joining you right in your homes and houses today. And we have an exciting guest today. I feel like this is a celebrity in eye care. We really don't need a big introduction because you're going to be so excited just reading the title on this podcast. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Walt Whitley.
Hey guys, how are you all doing? And you're making me blush right now, but thank you for that very kind intro.
Well, I definitely agree with Jen. And before we get started, jumping into the nitty gritty of the wonderful world of optometry, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in optometry as well.
Yeah, I started optometry. I graduated from Pacific University in 2002. And then I went on and did a residency at Eye Care Associates Nevada. It's a OD-MD practice, ocular disease and surgical co-management. And as you know, about 20% of optometry students end up pursuing a residency. And it's one thing that I did and I do recommend. But, you know, it's not for everybody, but it has definitely benefited me. And so after that, they signed me up and I worked at Eye Care Associates, that practice, for about 5 years, teaching students and residents. And then I had this great opportunity to join my current practice, Virginia Eye Consultants, where I do a lot of clinical research. I see patients 3.5 days a week, as well as do a lot of clinical education. And we have a large referral network of optometrists, primary care providers, and our practice, we have about 17 providers, both MDs and ODs. And so that's my background. Actually, I love it so much. I talked my brother, Warren Whitley, into being an optometrist, and he actually did the same residency and works at the same practice right now.
Oh, wow.
Talk about a spokesperson for optometry. You can convince family members to join the profession, then that's obviously you eating and breathing and sleeping optometry.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome because, you know, actually, we have students in residence right now. What I often tell them is you get out of optometry what you put into optometry. And my brother, I've always told him the same. He's been very active as a student, being a trustee for Pacific. But then now trying to get him involved and getting him to join me at all the different meetings. And so it's work, it's play, and it's family time for us now.
So you're talking about higher education. Of course, you did the residency and you really saw a huge benefit in that. But you didn't stop there. You also have your MBA. How did you decide to pursue that?
That's a funny question. I used to play softball several days a week, and I thought that there was a lot more things that I could be doing other than softball. And then thinking about my practice where I was, did I want to stay and join and run the practice I was at? Did I ever want to go into industry? Did I ever want to go into private practice? But then also for personal reasons, I decided, hey, you know, I'm gonna pursue this. And so I did it after work. It took me about 2.5 years. And so it was at the University of Nevada, Reno. After that, it's definitely helped me. If it wasn't for that MBA, I don't feel that I'd be in the position I am now within the practice and working within optometry.
This is so fascinating to me because right now I always feel so overwhelmed, like how could I possibly do anything else? But we were just talking recently, Daryl, with Dr. Melanie Denton, and she was talking about how doing her MBA after work really has completely changed her career trajectory. As someone with a family, like you have sons, you are practicing still, and then finding that time to go after work to get a degree, how do you make that balance?
Well, everything that we do is work-life balance. Fortunately for me, this was before I had a family. I was single at that time. And so I had plenty of time to do this and pursue this. And as I mentioned, it's been very rewarding for me. And one of the biggest things that I got out of it is not only working with people, but just thinking differently and outside the box and working toward a common goal, getting everybody working together. But to be honest, you don't need an MBA. I mean, the School of Hard Knocks, opening a practice, you're going to learn things as we go. There's great resources out there when it comes to consulting within optometry and healthcare. And so there's great resources out there. But learning and doing is another great way to learn business as well. We have many successful colleagues that have done so.
One thing that I like that you always talk about whenever you're doing presentations is just income diversification within your practice. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that and also give some examples of how that can take place?
Yeah, you bet. So whenever it comes to income diversification, we know that just healthcare is changing. We see it within the insurance reimbursements that are constantly decreasing. whether it's vision care, whether it's medical eye care. We know each year that CMS Services comes up with their new list and what's changing within reimbursements. And so we know that we're starting to see more patients. It's either work harder or work smarter. And so one of the things that we've done within our practice is cash-based services. Many of you may have heard me talk about aesthetics before. You've heard me talk about ocular surface disease. And ocular surface disease is probably one of the entry points to get into these cash-based services, such as the LipoFlow, the MiboFlow, or the IPL procedures, where we know that these technologies, unfortunately, even though they're not covered by the insurance, that these are treatments that patients need. And coming from us, making that recommendation, strong recommendation that that's what they need, then these are cash-based services that aren't affected by outside forces and helps improve the income of your practice.
I have a question for you, a little bit more personal on that. So I also work at a dry eye specialty clinic and we also offer LipoFlow, but any of these cash-based services, I'll sometimes get uncomfortable situations where I'm talking about the advantages of this great technology. Unfortunately, it isn't covered by your insurance now. Patients will call insurance and they get told by an insurance representative, this is a experimental surgical procedure, so they can't approve coverage for it. And then that kind of undermines what I've been talking about, where this is not experimental. This has got years of science behind it and FDA approval for treatment. How do you have those tough conversations?
Actually, I had just this discussion with one of our new ODs just recently and our resident. So whenever it comes to these treatments, these cash-based services, and actually anything we do, it doesn't matter if it's dry eye, glaucoma, or whatever the disease state is. We know, we educate our patients, we give them the different options, and we say, hey, this is what I'm recommending for you. You're already on the nutraceuticals, you're using lubricating eye drops, we have you on anti-inflammatories, topical anti-inflammatories. However, if we take a look at your scans, this is what's going on. You have this congestion, this obstruction, we need to get your glands working better, as well as we want to make sure they don't get worse. So this is what I'm recommending for you. In my experience, 90% patient satisfaction, as little as 1 month, 1 year, 3 years. There's different data showing that the LipoFlow is effective. And so this is the treatment that I'm recommending for you and will help you. It is not covered by your insurance. However, you know, this is what I'm recommending for you. I utilize a dry eye counselor who I hand the patient off to, and then she will go into the details with the patient. And that has been key to our success within LipoFlow. And, you know, I've done probably about 550 of these procedures. And so, you know, wow. You tell your patients about the experience and they're like, oh, wow. Your patients, 90%. They really like to hear that, those numbers.
Now, do you incorporate any of your patients with testimonials, whether it's online or video, audio, or something in office so that they can see folks just like themselves and just be more prone to actually utilize those services?
Yeah, we try to get people involved just like you all are involved with social media. We have our marketing team that gets involved with this. Anytime we have a patient where you know, gosh, I really need to get that on camera. I really need a statement. We make sure we take that opportunity. And so we'll ask the patient, hey, hang tight 1 second. I'm going to go grab my iPad. I'm going to grab something because this is good information that we definitely need and want to make sure we capture and then share it. Share it with everybody because that's how patients are going to, you know, they don't want to hear from me. They want to hear what other people are saying.
Absolutely.
So when you were talking about income diversification, one of the other things you mentioned was your aesthetics mm-hmm. Specialty. Mm-hmm. Honestly, aesthetics is kind of a new phenomenon with an optometry. I feel like it's starting to pick up some steam, but it has been one of those that primarily women are talking about within the industry. And you're one of the few male voices that are making it a primary target of their practice. So how do you embrace that conversation about ocular aesthetics with your patient?
Well, let me tell you how we got involved with this. So with Advanced Ocular Care, about 3 years ago, myself and Derek Cunningham, we were talking about this issue. And, you know, we both do a lot of ocular surface disease, and we know the effects that, or maybe we don't know the effects of cosmetics onto the ocular surface and how it can exacerbate it. But then we were involved with oculoplastic surgeons. We know people who do Botox. We have patients that are always asking about, you know, skincare and what makeup they should be using. And for a while, for me, it was like, I don't know. And so I do this lecture.
Also. You're not alone, okay? You're not alone. I was there and I'm still kind of there as well.
Well, so, it was several years ago when I did this, I did a lecture and I started off, I'm like, all right, who here knows how to put on makeup? And of course, a lot of people raise their hands and I say, well, how'd you learn it? From your sisters, your neighbors, you guys are coloring on each other's faces. And then I said, for the rest of you, You know, how many have no idea? And then a lot of the guys raise their hand and I say, this is what this topic's about, is how can we educate each other for our patients' benefit? And so that's how it got started. We had a beauty issue 3 years ago, contributions from ODs in private practice, in integrated settings, ophthalmologists as well. And then, so we've done about three issues of it, and it's been very exciting. But I mean, there are a lot of people out there that are leading the charge there, getting the information out, identifying the ingredients that can harm our eyes and exacerbate a condition that many patients are suffering from.
I love it, honestly. I love seeing that this is a topic that's not relegated to a female issue in optometry. It's like it adds some seriousness to it when any practitioner can be thinking, this is a topic I want my patients to know and care about. Whether you're a 20-year-old man or an 80-year-old man, like anybody can own this space. And I think it is so great to see various voices in there.
It reminds me of an article, Dr. Maharaj out of Canada, he wrote an article for us. It said, it was titled, From Gear to Gosling. And it was talking about the role for men.
Awesome.
And all the bro talks.
Well, I think it's huge for us as men to definitely jump into this realm because, you know, with optometrists in schools now, at least when I went, and I'm pretty sure it's the same for you, Jen, there were 70% women, 30% men. And the last thing you want to do is find behind the curve being a man, not knowing anything about ocular aesthetics, and they just go to all the women. So I think it's great for us to step it up because that can be something that can cause issues with our income diversification. So I think it's huge, and I look forward to more articles, presentations in regards to you touching on ocular aesthetics as well.
You know, one other point to bring up is, you know, who better than optometrist to own that space?
I agree.
We know it's not eyeballs on a stick. We know we have to look at the face. We have to look at all the anatomy. But then are we putting on it? And so when we think aesthetics, it's not just the makeup. It's not all the different creams and making sure we remove it. But also thinking about cosmetic contact lenses, huge opportunity there. Presbyopia inlays, such as the camera inlay, where patients are relying less on their glasses. Freedom spectacle independence. Refractive surgery. These are things that if we're not bringing up for our patients within our optometric practices, patients are going to bypass us. And they're going to go straight to the surgical center. And then even centers like mine, we say, well, I see Dr. So-and-so, who's your optometrist. We collaborate. We co-manage with them. Oh, no, my doctor doesn't know I'm here. So, no, I'm going to stay here for all the care. So it's important for any of these type of procedures that we are being proactive in setting the stage for our patients that we're involved.
You're so right. Because one of the biggest segments of growth that I've seen in our practice is lash lift, super popular in my area. And I'm trying to establish, like, before you go get lash lift, this cosmetic perming procedure that is not done in a medical setting, you know, you just go to an esthetician to get this done. You need an optometrist, me, to evaluate, make sure you don't have dry eye, because that's a contraindication for lash lift. So I'm loving just like these people coming in, they want to get this cosmetic procedure done, but they know because of the voices I put out there on social media that they need to get their eyes checked first.
And then another common procedure is a blepharoplasty. There's a high percentage of patients who are coming in for blepharoplasties for the sagging lids. They also have dry eye, and we need our oculoplastic surgeon tells us to, hey, address this first before you even send the patient to me.
That's great. And you know, one other thing that I think we should own a tad bit more is nutraceuticals. I know you always talk about the four C's. Could you elaborate a little bit more about that and how it can actually impact our practice?
You bet. So whenever it comes to nutraceuticals or even the aesthetic products, within our practice, we have decided that these are products that we're going to sell out of our practice. And the four C's that you're alluding to is convenience. If it's there, if the patients are able to get it at checkout, they're more likely going to do it. It decreases the amount of confusion that the patient has. If we don't tell them and give them the products and make it easy for them, they're going to go to the pharmacy and they're going to see all these different products, and they're going to go with the cheapest and not necessarily the one that we are recommending that could actually be more harmful for them. Compliance, the sooner they get it, the more likely they're going to use it, because if they don't get it right away, well, I'll get it at the drugstore next week or maybe the week after. And then cost, you know, within the practice, we can sell it at a comparable cost, maybe a slight markup in addition. However, taking all those factors into account, nutraceuticals, lid hygiene, or any of the products that we sell at the practice, making it easier for our patient, more likely to get it, more likely to do it, and better compliance.
So we're so lucky to have you on because we can really pick your brain on a successful dry eye practice. So we're talking about, you know, lid hygiene, nutraceutical products, anti-inflammatory eye drops, prescription drops. You're offering LipiFlow, lid hygiene stuff in office as procedures, IPL. With all of those things in your toolkit, do you still find that you're sometimes referring dry eye patients from optometry care to ophthalmology care?
You know, that's a great question, but it is not about optometry and ophthalmology. It's all about us working together, you know, because not every optometrist loves dry eye and not every ophthalmologist loves dry eye. So for instance, in our practice, there's a handful of us that are truly passionate about dry eye. And so we love seeing all the patients, whether it's a newly diagnosed or a very complex patient that we got referred to our practice. When it comes to ocular surface disease, I mean, we all should own it. This is the biggest opportunity that we mentioned earlier. Whether you have all the bells and whistles or all the different devices, the main thing is identifying the patient. We know that from the TFOS dues too. They have a couple questionnaires that they recommended, either the OSDI or the DEQ5, that essentially is going to make patients more aware of their symptoms and the frequency of their condition. In our practice, we utilize a speed questionnaire looking at the severity and frequency of their condition. And if a patient scores at a 6 or higher, that's patients that we are going to flag. We're also going to incorporate signs such as osmolarity, identify those patients. If the doctor in our practice wants to treat it, great. If not, I mean, even our retina specialists and our glaucoma specialists, they'll refer it to one of the doctors that are doing a lot of dry eye. And so within our practice, that's working very well. With our referring doctors, if they have patients that want any of these MGD procedures, we work with them. And these are procedures that we collaborate with them as well, where we'll do the procedure and send the patient out. But we, in our practice, we encourage our referring doctors to embrace it and own the condition.
Do you have any advice for doctors who might be in an environment where in the past, historically, MD and OD relationships have been more contentious and more territorial? How do they bridge that gap and create these collaborative relationships?
Building the relationships, it's all about trust and communication. Fortunately, we have a lot of these great relationships all around the country where there are ODs and MDs, whether they're internally working together or let's say it's not. Let's say it's an ophthalmologist and an optometrist within the community. Main thing is going out and reaching out to the surgeon and talk to them about the different products and services and see what they do, whether it's dry eye, whether it's IOLs and the advanced technology IOLs, such as the extended depth of focus lens or even the active focus lens, the Restore Active Focus, great distance and intermediate vision for the patient. So just get to know each other, you know, how you all can complement each other's services. You know, sometimes that's not going to, you may not agree and then fine. There's other relationships that you can build. You can ask your local society, ask your state association, or some of your colleagues in the area.
Excellent advice. And it's something that I think the future is really a pivotal moment for our success and our continued importance in eye care is to kind of make these collaborative relationships. And yes, it's important for us as optometry to continue to expand scope, and that's always going to create some contentious feelings when we go after that legislation, but making sure that even when we're kind of legislating our power within what we can offer to our patients in eye care, we keep these positive relationships with the MD community. That's our path for future happiness in this profession.
Yeah, and you're seeing it from both sides. There's a new publication coming out called Collaborative Eye, and essentially it's both MDs and ODs are the contributors. And it's all digital as well. And it's all about how we can work together. And that's why I'm bringing it up. Actually, one of my partners, Liz Yu, and she says this all the time. She is all for in collaboration with optometrists because we know the trends. We know that there are more optometrists than ophthalmologists, and that's only going to continue. And there's not going to be enough surgeons around to do all the various procedures. And so as optometrists, we're going to be called on to provide the medical care. And we're going to have to. I mean, that's where optometry is going. We know that there's a lot of external forces online, the various technologies, but we can control what we can control, and that is part of our profession. Yes, refractive, but embracing the medical model as well.
Whenever I have a dry eye expert or guru on the show, and I know Jen's the same way, I always like to ask about some of the newer drugs out, in particular Xiidra. It's been out for a decent amount of time now. How are you utilizing this in your practice? And are you using this along with Restasis, or do you have a preference for one over the other? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Xiidra is a great addition to our treatment armamentum. We were actually involved with several of the studies when it came to lifitegrast. And the good thing about Xiidra is it does have a quick onset of action. What do patients care about? Their symptoms. And within the clinical studies, with as little as 2 weeks, patients did show improvement within the symptoms. And so patients, in my experience, have been very happy with it. But, you know, there are some patients that the side effects, even as minor as they may be, that maybe they aren't happy with it, but we have other choices. Cyclosporin's been around for 15 years now, and I have thousands and thousands of patients that are very successful in cyclosporin. And so that's another option for the patient. We still have steroids that we can use for the patients as well. And so it's not a one-size-fits-all. If we need quick symptom relief, then Xiidra is what I've been going to. Long-term, if the patients want to stay on Xiidra, great. If it's successful, I'm not going to change it. But we also have to take a look at this thing called the insurance. We know, unfortunately, we may have our best medication, our go-to, but the insurance may not cover it. And so we need to be flexible on addressing our patients' conditions.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because a lot of practitioners, we want to do dry eye, right? We so are invested. We know that's the way to grow the practice. We know our patients need it. And then it's easy to get bogged down by how much work it is for you as the doctor to write these prescriptions for a dry eye. How do you handle prior authorizations in your office to keep you from going nuts?
Great question. We're fortunate to have a full-time staff member, and that's pretty much all they do, is they deal with prior authorizations. And so she would be the expert at that more than I would. And so having a key team members in place, whether it's for prior authorizations or even just even patient education, because sometimes with the dry eye patients, I'm in there just as long, if not longer, than I am with a newly diagnosed glaucoma patient, where I'm educating, you know, why do I have it? I've tried this, that, and the other. Why isn't it working? How are you going to be different than all the other doctors that I tried? What treatments are you going to give? And so just having a good team in place, having that team member work with the different sales reps, because of course they want you to be successful and be able to get the medication for the patients, utilizing programs such as PARRX and the various programs out there, just to help with all these issues.
What good advice. I'm like, Daryl knows my personality, but I'm really bad about like hoarding all responsibility. And like, oh, I need to do all my prior authorizations. I need to do, but I just loved everything you said, like a dry eye counselor. Great. I need to have that. Someone who can do my prior authorizations. It's coming to a head. But I think it's hard for some personalities to let go of responsibility. So it's great hearing from someone who's so successful in doing that.
One of the things I learned from my partners when I joined this practice about 10 years ago is something they learned from one of their mentors is do only things that the doctor should be doing. And so that is going to be not the data collecting, depending on your state, how much you can delegate. But our job is to evaluate, to come up with a diagnosis, and then also do the treatment as well. And so any of the other things that are out there, that's where we utilize our team. And so supporting your team, you got to have a happy team, because if you don't have a happy team, they're not going to be happy with the patients. And we need to make sure everybody's happy.
Happy patients.
That's
happy
right.
That's right.
So what's next for Dr. Whitley in the world of dry eye?
So what's next? It's just such an exciting space right now when it comes to dry eye and ocular surface disease, whether it's the different treatments. LipiFlow has always been my go-to procedure. But we know that we're hearing so much more about IPL, and I really want to get my hands on that and see what impact it is, because these are complementary. We all have several colleagues. Doug DeVries comes to mind. Whitney Hauser comes to mind, that they have both LipiFlow and IPL, and they've shown how using them together can complement and help with our patients. Next few conferences that I'm going to I'm meeting with some people that are talking about the different meibomian gland devices to help with
MGD, which we know is highly prevalent in our space. TruTier, that is very exciting. We were involved with those studies as well. And when it comes to TruTier, this is the neurostimulation where the patients essentially are going to put these two prongs. They're going to gently put it just inside the nostrils. They're going to be able to adjust how much power or how much stimulation is going to occur. And due to the lacrimal functional unit, we know that the nerves within the nose and the eye and the brain, they're all connected. And so patients are truly making a TruTier. And there's different studies that are showing the contents are similar, but the FDA clinical approval was for increased tear production. And several patients on that already, and they love that device. And there's more drugs coming out. There's in the next few years, there's several in the pipeline. Different versions of cyclosporin are coming out, as well as even loteprednol, considering mucus-penetrating particles, helping this to get into the target receptors and addressing the inflammation. So there's a lot of excitement when it comes to dry eye.
Thank goodness there's so much innovation going on, because for every new thing that we get, I get re-energized, and then I still, of course, we all have patients. Dry eye is such not a cookie cutter condition. And I'd be like, okay, we got this new thing. Oh, it still doesn't work for you. You're still miserable. But it's so exciting to be able to tell them, well, I've got five more new things that maybe in the next year I could talk to you about.
Yeah. And so when we're talking about ocular surface disease, we have to remember we're talking to these patients. I always start the conversation part of the conversation is, how long have you had dry eye? And setting realistic expectations for our patients. Where, you know, I've had it for years. Well, Mrs. Smith, I'm not going to fix it in a week, a month. It may take several months, if not a year. But there are various treatments that I have available now. And then if we need, I could add down the road. There's future technologies in the pipeline. And just letting the patient know that we're going to be with them, not to cure their condition, but to help minimize the symptoms and manage it over their lifetime.
And just that encouragement that you're giving them, like, this is a continued process. I'm constantly going to have that new technology for you. This is a relationship that we're going to keep going forward. Because so many of these dry eye patients bounce from doctor to doctor to doctor because they feel like they're given one thing that didn't work. Well, now they need to find a whole new doctor again. And establishing that you're going to keep giving them new things if something is not helping them to the great extent that they need. I mean, that's a information that I don't think they are traditionally getting when they go see an optometrist.
Right? You know, the other thing is, along with setting realistic expectations, is, you know, with the different medications, what can the patients expect? For instance, we'll go with cyclosporin, and we've heard this before from patients. They'll come in and say, oh, I've been on Restasis before. It hasn't worked. Well, tell me more. How long were you on it? I was on it for a couple weeks. Well, Mrs. Smith, with Restasis, with dry eye, this is a chronic condition. And so what Restasis does, within a month to 2 months, you're going to start to feel increased tear production. But it's going to take several months for it to really, truly address the inflammation. But the one thing about Restasis, that it works on all three of the tear layers, the mucin layer, 191% increase in goblet cell density. Aqueous layer, and that was in the pivotal trials on the Schirmer score, but then also with the castor oil in the vehicle itself, working on the lipid layer. And so, Mrs. Smith, we may need to use this medication. However, let's start you on this, that, or the other, and we can consider reintroducing it. Or even, Daryl, you just mentioned Xiidra earlier. Whenever we prescribe anything new, as a provider, we can't base our experience off of one or two prescription. Oh, my patient didn't like it, so it's not going to work. Or my patient tasted it. You need large numbers. So what I do is I challenge people. I say, hey, you know, providers, and I say, hey, prescribe 25. And based on that 25, gather some data, ask your patients how they're doing on it. And you're going to find, just like the clinical studies, that patients are going to be very satisfied and it's going to address their condition.
Well, your enthusiasm for ocular surface and just optometry as a profession is very contagious. So I feel like we're going to get back to a clinic Monday morning, Daryl, and go save some dry eyes, right?
Absolutely. For all the folks that are listening today and that want to get a little bit more information or even pick your brain, what's the best way for them to contact you? Do you have an email address or social media handles? How can they reach you?
Feel free to email me anytime, whitley, so whitley, at vecvictorechocharlie2020.com. And that's probably going to be the easiest way to get in touch with me.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.